Hello and welcome to episode 115 of Gutter to Gutter Podcast. In this episode, I'm joined by Ben Jenkins. Ben is a Kiwi pro drifter from the North Waikato area and is one half of Team Jenkins Motorsport, which is shared with his older brother, Troy. In this episode, we get to talk about Ben's childhood on the farm, learning to ride horses, motorcycles, drive cars, and everything in between. We got to learn about how Ben started out in drifting, who inspired him along the way, and how supportive his family was and still is throughout his whole career. We got to talk about how he started out with Phoenix Cooling and being able to work on or be involved with really cool custom builds, and also about how the connection with Keep It Reet and taking car giveaways over to New Zealand came about. I had a great time getting to know Ben in this episode, and I hope you do too, so please enjoy episode 115 with Ben Jenkins on Gutter to Gutter Podcast. Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Gutter to Gutter Podcast. I am Static, and joined with me in this episode is Ben Jenkins. Ben, how are you, dude?
Yeah, g'day, man. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, we've given it a couple of goes, but we're finally here, and I'm doing real well. And yeah, just keen to get stuck and share my story.
Nice, man, nice. It has been a little bit, I guess we've been back and forward for a little while, which has been cool, but such is the nature of the beast. I last week when we were meant to get together, work got in the way. So thankfully this week it's not.
And yeah, 100%, man.
And we're into it. So we'll start off, mate, like we do every other episode. We'll get a bit of a rundown of who Ben Jenkins is and what you do, mate.
Well, yeah, not really a question I get asked often, but yeah, I'm Ben Jenkins. I'm one half of Team Jenkins Motorsport here in New Zealand, a drift team. New Zealand, I say. The Australians, it's pronounced a bit different, and I get a bit of stick for it every now and then by my good friends and teammates over there. Yeah, I'm just a hard-working young drifter over here that just can't get enough of it, really, is a good way to say it. And, yeah, I run a business over here, Phoenix Radiators, underneath a great friend of mine, Adrian Andrew, who owns a company here in New Zealand. So, yeah, from day to day, if I'm not in a drift car, I'm working at Phoenix Radiators here in New Zealand, Phoenix Cooling. And we support a whole lot of race car drivers, whether it be circuit or drifting or street over here, with cooling products, which is quite well known in the Australasian drift scene and motorsport scene. So I run day-to-day operations with a great team here in New Zealand, and do a bit of performance work with Phoenix Australia and things like that. And yeah, it's just my whole life really is dedicated to a lot of drifting and dedicated to a lot of motorsport and things like that, and products in those both those aspects. And yeah, I really enjoy it. It's good fun. It's a full throttle lifestyle that we sort of live over here, my brother and I. And we've devoted ourselves to the whole drifting culture.
Yeah, awesome, mate. That sounds unreal. That's a definite way to keep yourself involved in motorsport, and I guess funding drifting, the motorsport you love. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Definitely. You know, I'm 10 years deep now competitively. My brother's probably 13, 14 years competing, and deep inside of drifting. So yeah, you sort of don't take into account these years that go by really fast these days, and how deep you are involved in the scene. And it's also it's into further motorsports and things like that we love to get involved in.
Yeah, nice, mate, nice. Let's rewind before we get right into that side of things. Where is it that you grew up?
So I grew up in the North Waikato area, which is about an hour and a half south of Auckland. My brother and I grew up on a farm, actually. a thoroughbred farm with our awesome family, doing a whole lot of range of things, whether it be farm work or whatever, or driving whatever we can get our hands on, farm vehicles, things like that. So yeah, it's out in a place called Pukekaua, which definitely grew us up into taught us into this lifestyle of either driving things or riding things, whether it be motorbikes or we, at the young age, we actually, my brother and I, more my brother, we were into a bit of horse riding and things like that. And then once we grew into our teenager ages, we jumped on motorbikes and started doing silly things on motorbikes. And then we finally got into cars and motorsport and things like that, which is on the aspect of safety. We thought the going down the road of jumping on jumping into race cars and things like that was going to be a bit safer than riding dirt bikes. So it's quite a common theme with drifters and things like that, especially in New Zealand. You know, you normally grow up and you jump into a or jump onto a motorbike, and then yeah, you sort of learn that it's a bit safer to be in a roll cage and in a racing seat than it is to be riding a motorbike around. So yeah, it's definitely a bit of a pathway here in New Zealand. Obviously, a lot of other drivers around me and stuff like that, we still muck around and jump onto motorbikes whenever we can, and we're days out or weeks out of events that we can't normally get hurt, but that's what we sort of do around in New Zealand when we can't get into a drift car.
Yeah, nice. I had Guy Maxwell on not too long ago, and he had much the same story. You know, the dirt bike injuries from dirt bikes and then ending up in the drift car that way.
That's yeah, right. Pretty much. It's quite a common story over here, that's for sure.
Yeah, I bet. Have you got a favourite memory from that time?
There's so many, but just, I don't know, driving farm vehicles on frosty mornings, feeding livestock and feeding things like that. You know, you sort of, at a really young age, like, I mean, you know, 10, 11 or 12 years old, you're out doing dumb things in farm vehicles or fun things in farm vehicles as you probably thought it was back then. But now looking back at that sort of stuff, it probably was dumb. But yeah, just growing up on a farm in like rural New Zealand was definitely, yeah, just awesome to do. And there's a lot of people that probably haven't had the chance to do that sort of thing. So my brother and I, and I'm very thankful to be able to grow up in that sort of environment to then lead on to, I don't know, what we do now, you know?
Absolutely. So I guess growing up on a farm, getting into using all the machinery and riding and driving anything that has wheels. Also, I imagine there's a lot of early mornings and late nights and hard work. Has that given you like a really hard working ethic? Like, do you get up early in the mornings now, or do you like to have a bit of a sleep in because you've sort of done all of that earlier on?
100%. Like, I don't know, friends and family around us, my brother included, you know, like, it's quite hard to have a sleep in or things like that. Like, your mind's always ticking of there's something to do, whether it be around the house or the lawns or being in the workshop, which is just down the road. So yeah, and it's definitely set that sort of mindset from a young age of going and doing that job or doing something, you know, like, you got to be doing something. If you're not, you're sitting down and relaxing for 10 minutes and you don't even call it relaxing, you know. And people are always telling me, like, you need to take a break or whatever, but they just don't really understand. Like, that's where you've grown up and that's what you need to do. And I guess maybe later in life I might learn how to do that or learn how to relax. But yeah, at the moment it's just, yeah, full throttle from the start.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. As a kid, did you get into any other sports at all?
Yeah, well, growing up in rural New Zealand, you know, and going to like rural schools, grew up around a big rugby union family. So myself, I played a lot of rugby union. I wouldn't say rugby, but you guys probably call it league over there. So yeah, I played a lot of rugby all the way into my early teens and things like that. And to be honest, over the last couple of years, I've actually thought about jumping back in and playing some social rugby again. But by the time you finish your drifting season and then get straight back into it to then prep a car again, these years and these months go by so fast that you just don't have any more time to do things. So yeah, one day maybe I'd get back into it, maybe play some golden oldies or something over here, as they call it, once you finish everything else and you come back and play. But Played a lot of rugby union.
Yeah, awesome, man. That's really cool. Dream cars growing up. Did you have any dream cars?
Oh, dream cars. I grew up in the, you know, the teenage days of the Fast and Furious era. So, yeah, dream car was obviously an R34 GDR. Awesome car. I've seen many. I've driven many and been involved in many R34 GDRs. So that was definitely my, as growing up, was my dream Japanese car.
Yep. What's the odds of you owning one day?
Oh, one day, maybe. But if I play my cards right and be smart about things, I definitely have one in the garage. The money of them over here is probably the same over there. Is, and they've gone crazy. And yeah, I'd love to have one. It'd be definitely a collector's car to put in your shed.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I think that's kind of it's definite a definite bucket list car of mine, which I'll probably never ever own, to be honest. But it's always been up there for myself as well.
Yeah.
It's really weird. Like, it's been the R32 or the R34. It just skipped the R33 altogether, which I'm sure many people sort of have the same thing, right?
100%. You know, the R33 was always the ugly duckling over here, but they're coming back and there's a lot of good-looking ones. We've seen a lot of good-looking ones.
Absolutely, man, absolutely. The R33s, I think it was just the styling of the time that didn't work, and now they're kind of – they're sought after now because they were that ugly duckling that nobody wanted, so there's probably a lot more of those left.
100%. You're dead right, and the well styled ones and things like that are definitely the sought after ones, especially over here. If you see a good one and they're nice and tidy, then they're definitely a keeper for your collection.
Absolutely, and the time, I guess, like the rise of the JDM cars and all that sort of stuff, it was during that, I guess, during that sex spec era. So you got them with horrendous wheels and horrible body kits, and now that the world has kind of just gone back to like an OEM plus sort of deal.
100%, 100%. OEM plus, like, we bought a lot of cars at Phoenix for the owner, and the OEM plus era is definitely alive, you know, like,
yeah,
you definitely rate an OEM car with a lot of stock things in it and tastefully modified over something that's heavily modified with some ugly wheels or an ugly kit, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So now they're just a much more tasteful and, like you said, more tasteful and more timeless sort of design now and styling, which is really good.
Yeah, 100%. That's it.
Like that same car now from, you know, like what, 1995? You know, in another 20 years, it'll still be the same styling. And I feel like that's going to be resonate a lot more than something you would have had in the early 2000s for sure.
100% agreed, yeah.
Yeah. Awesome, man. What was your first car?
First car?
Yeah.
All the way back, my first car was actually an Isuzu Bighorn. It was a farm vehicle.
Right, okay.
Handed down to me from my father, and I learned a lot of things in that. A lot of driving techniques and a lot of stupid driving techniques in that. But it was a farm vehicle that we used to drive between farms or from our property to the farm. And yes, that was actually my first car. And I remember getting given it from my parents is like, you know, this is your first thing to look after. And it was definitely at a young age. It was a lot younger than the driving age here in New Zealand. And yeah, it's not as cool as someone saying their first car was a Silvia or something like that, but it was a young age that we drove this thing, and damn, we drove it pretty hard.
Yeah, awesome. So what is an Isuzu Bighorn? Is it like a ute or a pickup truck or something like that, or...?
It's like a little SUV pickup truck thing. I think okay. Used to call them like a Holden Jackaroo or something.
Oh, okay. Okay, yep.
Yeah, so a little full-size SUV thing.
Yep.
With like a little diesel motor in them, but they were rear-wheel drive. They were a big lunchbox-looking thing, but yeah, we used to have a whole lot of fun in that, especially driving from farm to farm. Yeah, years and years ago. That's a long time ago now.
Absolutely. I mean, they're not huge, but they were, I don't know, like over here, obviously in the four-wheel driving world, they didn't do well because they just didn't look great.
Yeah.
But they worked well.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone 4x4s them anymore because they're probably all rusty and gone to the scrappies. But, yeah, it was, like I said, it was a hell of a lot of fun to go around and drive that around farms and, yeah, like dewy mornings in the paddocks when you're feeding out of that thing, you just throw anything in the back and yeah, go and learn how to counter steer around some troughs.
Nice. You'd feel pretty invincible in something like that too, yeah?
Well, 100%. And, you know, when you're young, you feel invincible in anything. You could be in anything. You could be in a Volkswagen Beetle if you wanted to be.
Yeah, absolutely, man. That's cool. That's really cool. Did you modify that car at all?
Nah, I never modified it. It modified itself, really. I think it ended up having a nasty tick at the end, but we drove it till the end. But yeah, these were early days. I didn't even know how to modify a car or do anything of the likes. Probably the biggest modification was throwing a bale of hay in the back and heading off a couple acres out the back to feed out.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. So I imagine that thing just got driven into the ground.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know if it's still going to this day, but damn, it would have some stories to tell if it was that big one was still around.
Yeah, I bet, man. I bet. That's really cool. So where did your love of cars come from? And I guess what age was that?
So young, my love of cars definitely came through my older brother, Troy, who's also my teammate to this day. So, he got into drifting early. He got into cars early as well at a young age, and I sort of thrived off that as well. And being a younger brother sort of thing, I just wanted to be involved. So we went from motorbikes into that sort of thing, and he had some pretty cool cars at a young age as well. So I definitely owe my love for cars to start off was definitely with Troy. He had some cool Skylines and things like that at a young age. So, yeah, he taught me a few things from that sort of time. But at that sort of era when he had those cool cars, you know, he was at a young age and he didn't really want his younger brother hanging around. So, yeah, I sort of had to sneak in and get my little fix on cars and things like that. And it sort of moved on from there once we grew older.
Awesome, awesome. So did you get to, I guess, learn through watching him what to do and what not to do as far as, you know, getting into working on cars and playing with cars, even drifting and driving and all that sort of stuff?
Definitely into the drifting things, which is a bit later in life, or a bit later in those years. But my love and things of tinkering away actually came from early days of cutting school and going and working locally at a performance shop. So that was definitely what it was. I ended up, I was a tyre fitter at a friend of mine's shop that we ended up following a couple of D1NZ drivers back in the day around the country and sponsored them. So I was just a young kid, keen as 14, 15 years old, and just traveling the country to do tyres and things like that at drift events. So I definitely paved my own sort of pathway into doing that. And then the later years sort of grew into what we were doing after that with my own vehicles and stuff at a very, very small scale of what we would do now.
Yeah, awesome. How supportive were your parents of you sort of getting around the country, following teams around?
Oh, man, my parents, I owe a lot to them and a lot of drivers around New Zealand. You know, they used to come to our workshop we had up in Drury, which when we were actually competing. My parents have been, amazing in what we're doing. They would help along the way as much as they could and support us, myself and my brother, to the end. And they still love to come down and see what we're doing. And obviously now it's in a much larger scale, but we definitely started in a bit of a back garage. And massive thanks to them. There's a lot of D1NZ drivers used to come to our workshop, which was close to our local track, Pukekohe, up in Drury, and we spent countless nights just working away on cars, tinkering around cars, people arriving at all sorts of hours to get things done and stuff like that. So yeah, they're very supportive. They always have been and they're always gonna be.
That's unreal, mate. That's unreal. So they had a workshop. You essentially had a workshop. Does that mean you had a lot of cars yourself to play with and work on?
Yeah, 100%. Like, we've always had my parents sort of gave us the shop that what we needed, and we fitted it out, and then we ended up having a lot of friends that helped us and things like that. And I suppose a sort of Troy and I pushing our friends that probably necessarily weren't into competitive cars or anything like that, just had nice street cars, but then they ended up buying cars and then storing them at our workshop, and that's where sort of our Team Jenkins Motorsport Workshop created. It was just a bit of fun. And, like I said, all hours of the night, we'd either be testing a race car or testing a new build or a new car, whether it be for ourselves or one of our crew or one of our friends. And, we ended up having a lot of cars at our workshop. You know,
it could be 6 or 7, 8 competition cars between us and our friends and track day cars and stuff that we'd be tinkering away on. And it was just in the back workshop at our parents' place.
That's unreal. That's so cool. I bet with a workshop comes a lot of new friends.
100%. You know, in New Zealand, we say that if you want to get friends, you buy a car trailer. But if you've got a workshop, you get even more friends and they love to come around. And we love it. I've still got a workshop. Well, we still run a more professional shop now. But, yeah, back then it was just whatever you've got. If you've got an issue, bring it around. You know, we'll give it a go or we'll hit it together. Or if not, we'll sit there and have a beer and think about it, you know.
Absolutely. It's the instant friend maker, isn't it? The car trailer and the hoist.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, the car trailer is the biggest thing, yeah. everyone can buy a car pretty fast and spend money on a body kit, but, yeah, it's definitely you got best friends when you got a car trailer, and that's probably the normal thing around the world, to be honest.
I think so, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That seems good. Street cars. Have you gotten into a lot of street cars and things like that? Have you had a lot of that sort of stuff?
I've had a lot of street cars, my brother as well, but I've had a lot of street cars. And I've always wanted more and things like that, or maybe like a Sunday cruiser or stuff like that. But now with the busy lifestyle and what we do and so much focus on our workshop, I don't really have the need for one. But yeah, I've had a lot of street cars, a couple of Silvias. I had a really nice JZX100 that I bought off a friend that was just an amazing car to drive. But to be completely honest, I've got beautiful cars that I can drive and that I've built with the boss of Phoenix, Adrian Andrew. He's got some amazing cars. You can drive them every now and then, but yeah, definitely you sort of get too busy to do that sort of thing. But I'd appreciate having a nice street car, like we said before, whether it be a GER or something like that, or an RX-7 sitting in the garage for sure.
Yeah. So go give us a bit of a list of, like, I guess the more notable cars you've sort of owned over your time.
Oh man, starting off when I really wanted to get into it, but you're young and you can't really afford it. I had some beaters of some Skylines. I've had a C35 Lorel. I've had a couple of S13s. One ended up being my first competition car. What else have I had? I've had some fast WRXs, which Troy and I have really liked years ago, the version 7s and version 8s. Yeah, JZX100s, things like that. S14s with different motor variations in them and things like that. I've had quite a few, haven't had them all. One day, obviously, I took them off if you've got all the cool JDM classics on your street car list. But yeah, I've definitely had a whole bit of a lolly bag of different street cars in my time, whether they be gooders or shitters or whatever they are. But yeah, I've had a few.
It's a bit of a cool mix. Like, it's not just brand loyal, which is really cool. Have you got, like, a most memorable car out of that bunch?
Oh, when I was young, I did some swaps and some trades and ended up with this really fast version 7 WRX. And it was my first all-wheel drive. I think it was 16 at the time. And it was just a fast car, you know, like on the street, fully legal. Had all the tunes in it and everything, and had all the mods that you needed when you were young, and it made really good power back then. So that was probably one of the notable cars, because it was probably my first car that I'd taken the step and had been road legal in New Zealand, so I could actually probably legally drive that car, which was amazing. And to this day, I've always thought about it, and I'm like, that was a fast car and a very nice car to have at a young age.
Nice. What was the demise of that, or what was the end of that? Did you pass that on? Did something happen to it?
Well, it was at the young age of when Troy just started competing in D1 and things like that, and he had an amazing S15, like epic S15 that he had back then when he got into it. And I had this thing for a while, and it was just gaining in what it was worth. And then one day, I've always wanted to get into drifting, but I didn't want to sell my soul to do it, because I needed something to get me to my job to be able to pay for this sort of thing, you know. So I ended up, the demise of that was ended up selling that to then fund my first competition S13.
Yeah, right, okay. So I imagine with that, if you're selling, that's your daily driver, I'm assuming. Yeah, so if you're selling that to fund a drift car, you also need to... some like part fund another daily. Is that right?
That's correct. That's correct. And I went through countless at the time. You know, I was an apprentice mechanic. And I went through countless Nissan Primeras and things like that that were just going to be basic, you know, SR20, go forever, and drive them to work. And it was quite a bit of a commute for me for my apprenticeship. I was still living in Drury, New Zealand, which is south Auckland. And my apprenticeship was way up in town at one of the dealerships. So it was a bit of a commute. It was about an hour and 40 some days, hour and a half some days with the Auckland traffic, because obviously a lot of people know, which was terrible. And I just kept going through these things, whether it be just little issues or things like that, or nose to tails or whatever it was. And it mostly wasn't my fault, things like that. And then you ended up, getting another little crapper around or whatever you needed to do, but you'd always be chasing your tail with these things until finally I worked hard enough to then buy myself, which was a tow car, and jumped into a Mazda BT50, which then ended up my daily, and that just changed my life forever, having a modern vehicle to be able to drive to work and then drive it home and then find one of my friends or one of my new friends who had a trailer for me to borrow, and then I could go to the track with my nice drift car.
That's awesome. That's really cool. So what's it like going from those beaters into that brand, not brand new, but, you know, that new car, the modern style car?
It's crazy. I can still remember the memory of picking the thing up, you know, like going from early 90s Primeras and Sentras, I think I had at the time, thinking this was the bee's knees, having a nice S13 at home and doing that. But then once you jump into something modern, I think it was like 5 or 6 years old at the time when I got a BD50 Ute. You just got to pinch yourself and drive it so carefully. And it was amazing to be able to, like I said, you know, take that to work and do your 9 to 5 and drive it home and then tow your race car to the track was always a good feeling. And I think that's quite a big feeling for a lot of young drifters, especially around Australasia and things like that, to be able to actually go home and load your race car up on your own vehicle or your own trailer or whatever like that is, and then cruise on over to the track.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good thing.
Mm.
What do you get up to, mate, at the moment when you're not drifting?
I live a busy life with Phoenix Radiators, so definitely definitely work a lot hard there. We've got an amazing crew, so it's a really good vibe. So it's more than just your 9 to 5 or your 8 to 5. We spend a lot of time doing a lot of things with the Phoenix crew and a lot of work. And if I'm not at the Phoenix, not at Phoenix working or in the workshop with Adrian at Phoenix, then I'm normally down at my workshop a little bit south than us here at Pocono at my own workshop. But yeah, we've got a good bunch around us that we've sort of created our family, our drift family around us, that we spend a lot of time outside of motorsport and things like that. So yeah, when you look back at it and right now I'm thinking, yeah, what do I actually do other than motorsport or other than drifting? But yeah, when all our friends and our family and stuff like that around, then you spend a bit of time with them and try and do other things. I've got a dirt bike. I've got a real nice dirt bike that I go and do a little bit of riding on. And yeah, you sort of pick your times where you can do that out from events if you want to go and have a lot of fun. But yeah, it's predominantly my life outside is still motorsport based, and you're always doing something, whether it be, I don't know, I do a lot of work with some Australian companies and things like that that's outside of Phoenix work. So yeah, it fills up your schedule pretty fast.
Yeah, awesome, mate. So drifting wise, mate, when did you get into drifting?
So actually a memory came up on Facebook the other day, and I've actually been competitively drifting for 10 years. So yeah, rewind 10 years ago, what would it be, 2013, I got into drifting with my first S13 that I bought relatively cheaply back then. Like, you would not find what I bought this S13 for, and then had good friends around me. My brother had come around and realized that I really had a passion for this as well, and he helped me a lot from the start with the S13, and good friends of ours and teammates at the time, the Seas Garage boys. Joel, who I did a lot of skateboarding and things like that with pre-drifting, and followed them around and helped them for years with Troy through D1NZ and the Pro-Am is what it was called back then. So yeah, did a It's been about 10 years competitively drifting, and when you actually think about that, it's actually turned into a bit of a long time. And yeah, coming up into my probably 11th year competing.
That's unreal, mate. It's a long time when you think back, but that's really cool. It's time like that kind of flies, hey.
100%, and you just look back at the years and what you've done and what you haven't done and things like that, and you realize, yeah, well, even though we had 2 or 3 years or 2 years of COVID inside of that, it definitely look back and you see exactly what you've done and what you've driven and where you've gone, and it's actually quite cool to be able to tell the story.
That's unreal, mate. That's really cool. Yeah. So I assume you got into it, or essentially got into it through your brother. Well, that was a big part of why you started drifting?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. So I owe a lot to Troy to getting me into it, and getting me into this sort of 10-year dynasty we're on right now, and thank you for that. So yeah, following him around and doing a whole lot of stuff and learning with him, and at that time I was getting into my middle to late years of my apprenticeship of being a mechanic. So spent a lot of time working with him and working on his S15 as it was in the day, and just constantly learning and soaking in and getting to sort of rub shoulders with some of the other drivers at that time as well, and good friends who are still really, really good friends now. It's definitely paved a bit of a pathway of what I have done and what we did at the time. But I owe a lot to Troy for getting me into this, and yeah, I wouldn't look back. You know, that's just what we do now, and it's been a really great 10 years doing this.
Yeah, awesome, mate. So you started with your S13.
That's correct.
Was that your very first drift car?
My first drift car that could actually make it around a corner at a track. You know, I had a whole lot of beaters and a whole lot of things and stuff, and I thought that my ideas were right, and I never listened to anyone. So went through the Skylines and things like that, had some crappers of some S14s that never really just worked. Spent a lot of time, a lot of effort and making them look cool, and sort of didn't really know the basics of what I really needed to do back then. So Troy sort of showed me what the basics were and what I needed to do, and Joel from Seas Garage definitely, right at the start of having that S13, definitely showed me, yeah, the basics and what I really needed to do to go to the track and learn to drive and not worry about the car.
Yeah, awesome. So I guess your entry into drift, was that discouraging, sort of coming in through these cars that weren't really doing what they were meant to for you?
Well, I can't really say that. Probably now I look at it, it could have been discouraging. But when you're young like that, you know, you just keep going, and either the trading or swapping or building something new or throwing a new part in it, because all you wanted to do was make the next Saturday or the next Sunday to go back to the track. So, yeah, you look at it now, but back then I don't think it was. It was just, you know, you got a couple of your mates that probably didn't know a lot about it as well, and in your friend circles, but then you really need to think about what you were doing in the later bits, because at that time it was getting more expensive to go to racetracks, and it was getting more expensive to modify a car in terms of actually successfully having a good drift day and focusing on your driving.
Yep. Were you ever trying to drift like a daily driver or anything like that?
Years before that, I had a C35, the Rel, that I thought was the bee's knees, and I used to do a couple of wet pan and wet skid pan days and stuff like that, but I soon learnt that you couldn't go to an event and drive the thing hard back then with a small budget on apprentice wage and then try and drive the thing home. You know, you had to borrow a few trailers to get that thing home for sure.
And then you've got that stressful time of trying to get it ready for Monday morning again. You're like, oh, I've got to drive this thing to work on Monday, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. You know, it's all fun and games having a nice street drift car. Yep. But you got to have the budget behind it to make sure that car can make it to the track and make it through the day and then make it home for sure.
Yeah. Yep. Was testing in Mexico ever a thing for you?
Well, I don't really know. I see that question on here, but probably in the early days, you know, you get your hands on whatever you can, whether it be Mum's Falcon or something like that. like, yeah, definitely, you know, you'd be criminal in New Zealand to say that you're into motorsport now and you hadn't done that sort of thing when you were young, whether you call it drifting or whatever you called it, but it definitely gave it a solid go. There was definitely a couple of Barnard Falcons that I probably did pay a pardon for if my mother was going to say something about it. But yeah, you just can't get away with that sort of stuff over here these days, especially when you're what we're doing and the partners you have. You don't even think about it. There's no way. I get scared of taking a car out of the workshop to drive around the car park of what someone's going to say, you know?
Yeah. So I sort of grew up, obviously came up through cars in that, like, the early 2000s era. So street stuff was a lot more common then. I'm getting the sense that pretty much like Australia, New Zealand, like around that time, like 2010 to 2013 sort of thing, when you were getting into drifting, that it wasn't as big on the streets that way anyway.
There definitely was a street aspect over here, whether it was drifting or not. I don't think there was much of a, I guess, publicized street drifting thing. Yeah, you know, there was definitely some good drivers out there that probably were doing that sort of thing years and years and years ago. But the old modified car scene and things like that, the meets was a whole different style here in New Zealand, I felt.
Yep.
It was more the drag racing and things like that that was more prominent. And you wouldn't really see much of the drifting go out. I'm guessing people that were doing this sort of stuff years ago, probably just, you know, days before social media and things like that, and they were just going and doing it and then parking the car again, whether it be in the country or whatever they were doing. But yeah, definitely a different scene over here growing up like that than what now. I've got a lot of friends over in Australia and things like that and see the scene over there. And it seems like the old Mexican street circuit's quite prominent over in Australia, but there's definitely not much of that over here.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of it, which is good. It's a good thing, right? You know, we want to try and keep it on the track anyway as best we can, but it's definitely still there.
Yeah, for sure. You
know, and it's the younger constituent, we'll call it, to use a big word. But we've all been there, you know what I mean? Like,
definitely. In one aspect or the other.
Yeah, yep. So as much as you sit there and look at it and you go, oh, what dickheads, you're like, oh, hang on a second. Like, there was a time where I was that dickhead. So,
yeah, 100%. Yeah. You see all the time, like, and like, you can see what some people probably do and go out and do it by themselves and don't post about it, don't leave a mess, don't smash up curbs or whatever. But our local workshop right now is down at Hampden Downs, which is a racetrack in the North Waikato down here, which we've got all our amazing cars and a couple of other drift people have some cool workshops here. And you get these, I don't know what they call them these days, I think they call them takeovers or something like that. They come out and they just ruin intersections and ruin the sides and ruin the curbs and leave all their rubbish and all their shrapnel, and they do it right outside our beautiful Hampden Downs and things like that. So, and we're constantly trying to fight, right, these days to have our motorsport of drifting, of what we love, and our big community around the world to keep it off the street, keep it safe, and try and grow these youngins into, you know, like I was when I was young, like wanting to make it to the track and make it home and things like that. But there's definitely still that that aspect out there. It's just, I don't know, growing up and seeing that, it's just not that respect on the streets of whatever it was, like it was back then, you know. Like, it's definitely it's definitely a different world for the younger people in there with modified cars over here.
Yeah, absolutely. We still see it. Like, you know, we've troubles with tracks, especially here in Sydney. You'll have, you know, so many different organisations doing great work and spending the time and putting the effort in and really taking the time to sort of work with the tracks and all that sort of stuff to have us not look like idiots. You know what I mean? When we're at the track and it all gets brought undone by like one or two people doing skids through, you know, at Sydney Motorsport Park through the tunnel or something like that. Exactly.
And that's the way it is, you know. And now all these people that are out there doing that sort of thing and are probably the advocates for Like over here, we have a lot of people asking for public skid pans and things like that, and they're saying that they're doing this in the country or doing this in this intersection because they can't do that. But it's the fact that they need to realize, like, we're trying to grow the sport, we're trying to grow what we're actually doing here, and what they're doing is not helping. They need to actually support, come and pay the $50 or have a go at a racetrack or have a go at a skid pan or wherever the events are. But obviously there can't be events every weekend or things like that because everyone's living busy lives and a lot of things are going on, but they need to respect that. And that's the thing over here. I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, organizing something so small as an event for that, whether it be a skid pan or a skid pad or whatever it is they want to do, it's it definitely gets easily forgotten.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. All right. We won't go down that road too far. I think we've spoken enough about that sort of stuff on the podcast, and we don't need to get into doom and gloom because it's not. We're actually looking really good at the moment, which is really cool.
Yeah, awesome.
Nice, mate. Along the way, mate, who's been your biggest supporter?
Biggest supporter in my motorsport and things, obviously me and my parents. You know, coming from a small town, and we're a small country in New Zealand, and anyone in New Zealand can, and definitely would rather be doing that than preparing race cars at the same thing. But we try and run our team at a high attrition rate, and the cars at a high attrition rate. So there's a lot that goes into them behind the scenes, whether it be hours and hours of working on one aspect of the car, and we like to bring them out 100% and make sure that you grab that testing time and that expensive testing time with fuel and tires and make the most of it.
Yeah, awesome. So I imagine that takes a pretty dedicated team, yeah?
100%. And especially to run two pro cars at the level of our 86s. Like, there's a couple other teams in New Zealand that do it as well, the DSR boys and things like that. So you have to have a dedicated team. You have to have people that are onto it, and you need to commit and be focused on the job or the testing or the car, or even if you're at a comp event, from start to finish. So it takes a big team, and people have their jobs and different aspects of what they're doing inside of the team. And we're sort of like a rolling road show, you know, like we've got a big enclosed trailer that takes the cars and all the tools, and it's not just the car that gets to the event with all the fuel and the tires. There's a lot of spares and a lot of money in the spares to be known. And especially when you come down to a crunch time of a top 16, then everyone needs to know what and where's and what's going on. So, yeah, there's a lot of aspects to it that can create a successful team. And also, in my mind, I'm a mechanic, right? So I'm always got my mind wondering if this is done right, or if this is actually done, or if we've need to pay attention to a certain aspect. But when you have a good team that sort of mind readers and know the language that you speak, or the car almost knows the language of what the car does, everyone's onto it really fast, and that's what sort of creates that positivity in the team to be able to go out there and trust that car to 100% to be able to do what you need to do at these concrete wall rounds or these high-speed tracks.
Yep. You brought up a really good point there, actually. Coming from a mechanics background, what was it like for you to sort of, I guess, let go of some of the control and, I guess, what am I trying to say here? What was it like to let go of some of that control of working on the car and setting the car up yourself?
Well, it's still so hard for me, and it's probably hard for Troy. Both of us still set our cars up. We're just very lucky to have a great team. You know, I've got our head mechanics. We've got a guy from Wellington who's been with me my whole career, and we've also got a head mechanic, Chromie Ewan Shepherd, who did a lot of work with Mad Mike in the early days, and he's very mechanically minded, very drift minded, so he understands what the car does and things like that. And you sort of put a lot of trust into them, and Chromie always picks me up all the time and just tells me to shut up and leave him alone. He knows exactly what's going on, you know. So it's really hard for me as a mechanical background to actually turn that little aspect off. And I always really want to know, whether I'm over the radio or whatever to them, of what's going on inside the car. And I definitely get told to shut up and just drive the car along.
And what's it been like trying to find, I guess, team members and that sort of thing that you can rely on, like, to that level?
Well, it is very hard, you know. Like, we don't run professional race teams in New Zealand for drifting. It's nothing like the States or anything like that, probably quite similar to Australia. So we've got an amazing team around us of like-minded people that are just keen to get involved. And we do a lot of things outside together, outside of the drifting. So you've got to add all those aspects in to make sure it's an enjoyable weekend. And, yeah, like I said, we're not massively backed professional teams. So you've got to make sure it's an enjoyable environment to go away and go racing and do things together. And then that also creates, obviously, the outside of drifting environment. So, yeah, like I said, we've got an amazing team. Some of them have practice cars and things like that are in our workshop. And if we can lend a hand and do things like that, then we love to do it. But, yeah, I would not be where I am today, and definitely Troy would not be where he is today without that good core team behind you. And we definitely owe a lot to them for, you know, giving up their busy lives, whether they are. We've got some members of our team at different ends of the country, you know, that take up 2 or 3 days beforehand or afterhand of events to fly in and fly out. So, yeah, and when you throw in 2 pro cars instead of just one, it's a bit of a different aspect, and you've got to have almost double of what you need inside that team.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's unreal.
Hmm.
Comp or Matsuri style events, what do you kind of prefer?
Well, right now I'm in a bit of a dilemma, you know. Like, we've had some amazing comp seasons and things like that over here, and I obviously jumped into competition and just got eager to just win and things like that. I have had some good results and I've had some bad results, and always had that urge to just compete, you know, whether it be in motorsport or whatever. So, yeah, right now I haven't really enjoyed my competitive drifting. It's probably myself, it's completely on myself, just not driving how I should and how well I have. I was definitely an aggressive driver in the younger years of my 86 and things like that, and not caring much. But I guess it's just getting a bit of old age and, you know, things like that. I've actually got to go back to work on Monday and then spend 10 hours in the workshop over the week to fix the thing or whatever it is. So that's definitely got to me. But I spent some time coming over to Australia and I've done some cool events over there. Last year I did a couple of Keeper Eat events, and then ended up this year over with Matty Hill, who's one of my old teammates from over here, and doing a fun event up at Rayleigh, and that sort of gave me the love back for what drifting was, you know, like the non-competitive environment and things like that, and just going out and having fun and driving your car to the max. Like, I owe a lot to Matty and his driving style, and I've definitely looked up to his style over the last couple of years and what it is, and I definitely owe a lot to him with this newest 15 that I've built. But just that event, I think it was a Gravy Garage event up in Rayleigh. It was my first time to Rayleigh, and that place just blew my mind, you know, and the cars and the style and things like that, and driving from 8 in the morning till 5:30 at night and just having a whole lot of fun definitely gave me that bit of love back that I probably needed for like Matsuri style fun drifting. So yeah, I don't know, we'll see where we go from here.
Yeah, nice. So a good balance is probably a bit key. Yeah,
definitely. You've got to have a balance. You've got to enjoy it, you know. Like, you get so stuck in competitive drifting and all these pro cars, and like I said, you don't do much testing, so you get stuck in the setups and things like that, and what should we change? But sometimes it's really good to just go back to the basics of just getting in the car and driving it, and driving it close with your friends, whether it be low grip or high grip or whatever it is. But yeah, going back to basics is definitely a lot of fun, and it takes a lot out of a competitive driver to actually go back to that.
Yep.
And get into that zone of just having fun. But you need to remind yourself, you know, like I've reminded myself lately, I've actually got to be able to go back to that and enjoy that, because otherwise why are you doing it?
Yeah, absolutely. You guys get a lot of downtime in the off season. Yeah, you've got like a fair off season. You're pretty, your season's done kind of by, is it like April, May, is that right?
Yeah, that's normal. So we'll go from December to, yeah, May.
Yeah, gotcha. So that's, I guess that's 6 months, isn't it? So you got like a 6 month sort of off season. Do you get to get out much in that time?
In that time of the off season?
Yeah.
Like I said, we try to as much as I can. Like, it's going to be a little bit easier now with this new car we've built that we're probably not going to compete in. So over the last two or so years, I haven't really done that. When I did have a practice car, yeah, I tried to hit as many events as I can with a couple other drivers and crew members that are in my team, and we just go and have fun at Matsuri events, and they were really good, and it definitely helped my driving over those years to, you know, you just stay relevant and you just stay active in the car, and yeah, you try and do as much as you can. In the latest off season right now, I probably should be driving a lot more. I've done a couple of events, but over the last 6 weeks or so, we've ended up building this new car, and I've jumped in it a few times over the last couple of weeks, and we're going to end up over your way in just a month or so's time. So definitely going to be good to do a bit of driving before we come back here and decide if we're going to compete again.
Awesome, mate. Awesome. It'll be really cool to see.
Definitely.
Sim drifting. Have you gotten to do much sim drifting?
I am terrible on a sim. I am terrible at sim drifting. You know, a good friend of ours bought his fancy sim down here, like epic setup with all the screens and things. And I think Troy's a bit better than I am, but I am terrible at sim drifting. I can jump on a PlayStation and drive those car X's and things like that and have a whole lot of fun. But yeah, I don't know what it is. I think it's coming back from drifting. If you come back from drifting and onto a sim and try and learn, it's a lot harder than starting on a sim. I've got some good friends that have, over COVID, got sims and ended up drifting and doing all the Assetto courses. And then after COVID, bought drift cars and built drift cars and ended up coming to the track and killing it straight away, you know. So, yeah, like I said, I've had a few goes on it. And a friend of mine, if he listens to this, probably be laughing at me. And I am terrible on a sim at drifting.
Yeah, they take a lot of time, especially if you come from driving. Right?
Yeah.
If you start with driving, like you said, like it takes a long time to throw those tools out of your toolbox. You know what I mean? Like
100%, yeah.
Because
you're losing
all these different senses.
I think it's the senses, yeah. You know, like you can't feel it in the seat and things like that. You can't feel the G-forces.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like I said, we tried that, I don't know, in the last year, had a fancy sim here to do a bit of driving on it. I just, for the life of me, could not get to it, eh?
Yep.
Funny.
The biggest thing I always had an issue with was the understeer.
Yeah.
I could never tell what my front wheels were doing.
You can't feel it, yeah.
You can't feel what they're doing. So when you sort of look, because a lot of the games that a lot of the sims that you can practice on, you can actually sort of record it and play it back from a different angle. And you look at it and go, well, that's all understeer. But I had no idea, you know.
I definitely think I've spent a lot more time in the sand than I did actually drifting on the sim when we had it for a couple of months, that's for sure.
Yeah, good times.
Yeah.
Nice, man. Phoenix radiators. Let's talk about that. Where did that sort of come into view for you?
Phoenix Radiators was one of my first sponsors as a young gun drifter at my yesterday. Adrian Andrew is now my boss and really good friend. One of my best mates who owns New Zealand Phoenix Radiators. It's separate to Australian Phoenix Radiators, which is owned by a good friend of his. Getting off the tools as a mechanic and building drift cars back then, I was a mechanic during the day and then going home and building drift cars, whether it be mine or Troy's and that sort of thing. And it started taking its toll and just working on cars 24/7. And I was losing the love at that time for automotive and for cars. So it was definitely hitting me hard. And it was actually hitting me hard and at home with my own program and things like that. So I decided to take a step back from that and having it ruled my whole life and then jumped into a sales role and had various sales roles in automotive, whether it be Resene Automotive, which is a car paint supplier over here. I was a sales rep for, and then being good friends with Adrian at the time and him purchasing the company and taking over Phoenix Radiators, he headhunted me to come and work for him. So ended up working for him as a sales rep for a number of years, and then ended up jumping into the general manager role and helping alongside Adrian run Phoenix Radiators here and through New Zealand. So it's a wicked job. I love it. We do a whole lot of innovation and things like that in New Zealand, and it's not just your race cars and your performance cars. You know, that's only a small portion of what we actually do. We do a whole lot of day-to-day stuff, whether it be radiators or intercoolers or joiners or things like that. It's just a massive list. So it definitely, it's a lot more than what the name is, just sitting on the front of an intercooler on a race car. So, yeah, we've dived into it. We're working now with manufacturers and things in New Zealand, and we've just released one of the world's first last week for the next-gen Ford Ranger Raptor, which has been a big project that we're all proud of at Phoenix, and things like that. So, yeah, it's awesome. It's automotive. I'm probably never going to get away from automotive or something like that. It's taken over my life from a young age, and yeah, I'm still loving it to this day.
Nice. Do you get like hands-on in development sort of stuff with Phoenix?
100%. You know, like I hate being a pen pusher and behind the computer. We've got a workshop at Phoenix, whether it be developing or things like that in a performance vehicle or a brand new vehicle. I love it. I get straight stuck in and use my mechanical background and things like that. And either Adrian and I or one of our awesome team here will dig into a vehicle and develop. And that sort of side of the business as running it with our awesome team, I love that. That's actually one of my favorite parts is getting deep into development and figuring that out with our design team. And it's cool to see a finished product.
Yeah, awesome, mate, awesome. How did you get linked up with Keep It Reet?
Actually, I was thinking about this the other day, and I actually owe it to a good friend of mine, Nathan Greenhill, and our campaign in South Australia.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Yeah, just post-COVID, start of last year it might have been. I've always been talking back and forth with those boys from South Australia, and they linked me up with Jason, and Jason wanted to come here for a New Zealand campaign in D1. And this was after, now in my lifetime, one of my best mates, Matty Hill, was part of our team over here in New Zealand. He was doing a lot of ventures over there, and Jason wanted to come across. So I do a lot of work with Keep It Reet, and I actually run all the Keep It Reet car giveaways over here in New Zealand and do all that with all the cool JDM cars, real nice cars that we give away. And then Jason ended up coming over and joining our team, just being in our workshop, still in his Keep It Reet team. And he did a bit of a season over here in his Barra Wags that he loved. And now he's back over in Aussie, and I think he's just announced that he's heading to the States for the coming fun season and activations and things like that. But yeah, sort of back to those boys in South Australia, and I ended up going over there last year and competing in one of their battle royales and placing pretty well and driving the hell out of one of his Skylines. It's amazing that what he's doing over there, the old Keep It Reet vibe, you know, that a lot of people are singing his praises, and he's probably I probably haven't had that much fun in a competition environment in a like sort of track day environment ever. In a drift car, so yeah, I watch all the events live, and yeah, I'm stoked to call Jason a really good mate now, and he's definitely been played a big part in getting me involved and inviting me over as one of his mates to the LZ Festival coming up next month.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. So I'll get to meet you in person there, which will be amazing.
Yeah, for sure, it's going to be one hell of an event, eh?
Yeah, but it's amazing what. Jason started with Keep It Reet and what it's doing for drift in Australia. It's doing really big things at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. You know, just there's so much talent coming out of there as well. And I was just talking to my mate Mez today about it from Rickham and saying the talent of someone driving, you know, just I saw the other night some guy broke in his car, and because of the Keep It Reet rules let him jump in something else. I think he jumped into a Falcon and he still podiumed, you know. So it's just bringing those drivers there and obviously keeping them off the street over there and giving them that environment at Calder Park. Jason running, you know, 2, 3, maybe 4 events a month there to really get people to go and do these drift events and get close to the action. You know, when I was there would have been 5,000 people there on a Friday night or something like that.
Yeah.
Watching the qualifying and the battles and things like that. So he's definitely nailed it. He's got a good recipe, and they put on one hell of a show, him and his team.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really cool to watch. I've been to one of them because I'm in Sydney, so for me to get there, it's a 9-hour drive
it might as well
be the same amount of time sort of doing the drive to the airport and the flight and all that sort of stuff. By the time you sort of got your car and you're there, it might as well be close to the same amount of time anyway.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, it's really cool. Like the atmosphere there is really good. They just put on a really good party, I think.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. It's just all about the vibe and the fun, and they do a lot of giveaways. They've got oodles amounts of merch and things like that. And people are lined up to see all the drivers, even the young drivers. And like, it's just, it surprises me. Like every single driver over there can throw down, and They've all got cool cars and good style, and Jason definitely picks the epic tracks there as well to run at Caldo. Obviously, there's a whole lot of places they can run, and yeah, he's just doing great things for drifting in Australia, and it's definitely a name over here in New Zealand that I'm proud to be a part of, and a lot of people sing high praises here in New Zealand for events that he's running in his style.
Nice. I think I don't think it works the same if Calder Park wasn't there.
Yeah, probably not.
Super lucky in that aspect, but you know, being able to sort of put together what they do is really good.
Yeah, definitely. And like, I've seen the ins and outs, and Jason's got an amazing team under him with mechanics and things like that, and Josh Rogers who runs his events. And yeah, like I said, they run an amazing event, and it was really cool to be a part of that last year at one of their own events. And I'm sure they're probably 99% running this LZ coming up, and I can guarantee it's going to be one stellar event put on by them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. D1NZ, mate, when did you first enter D1NZ?
Yeah, probably 12 or 13 years ago in the S13, I'd say. I jumped in the deep end at that time. I didn't do too much of the track days before, probably only, you know, 8 or 10 track days before, until my brother and my brother's friends and the Seas boys said, you know, you may as well give it a go. And so, yeah, jumped into that. It was probably, 2013 or 2014 in my S13, which... yeah, I got some amazing partners on and good friends around me, and built a pretty killer S13 for your first entry into D1, which was Pro-Am at the time.
Yeah, nice. So, what was that entry like? Was that like your first competition essentially?
It was my first competition. It was Manfield at the event, and I didn't even qualify. So I spun twice on both my qualifying runs, whether it be nerves or lack of talent. I don't know what it was, but I definitely had a cool looking car. I remember thinking, this car didn't have enough power, enough grunt to end up trying to compete properly in the pro sport likes. But then soon after that, on my first event, when I didn't qualify, a good friend, Fanger Dan, had blown his car up. So I handed him the keys to my little S13 and said, you know, go give it a go. And he ended up driving that in pro to fourth position. So it quickly shut me up and showed me that maybe my skills went up to the task, and surely sent me home pretty fast back to Auckland. I think I did two or three track days in between that to the next round, and I ended up improving tenfold going into the round two of that year, and not blaming the car. Definitely needed some more track time under my belt.
Yeah, nice. Who were you competing with against at the time?
So then the top in the pro-ams was with my brother Troy, and Joel Hedges from Seas Garage was definitely fighting above his weight with his SR20 as well. This was sort of the start of the era in New Zealand with the pro sport drivers getting, you know, big dog boxes and big fuels and more power. So they definitely drove very hard, those boys. Joel, obviously an amazing driver of the Seas boys. He was an amazing driver, and yeah, he definitely drove well above his weight for what that car was back in the day. But yeah, competing against those guys, we had a couple of the young guns from down. Well, probably I was the young gun at the time, but the Lauder brothers were there. I think one of them was in pro sport and things like that. There was a lot of talent coming through, and it was all the way to outside the 16 that these people were talented to drive. So yeah, it was cool to actually rub shoulders with those guys straight off the bat in the pro-ams, and I'm still driving with a few of those guys today.
Yeah, that's awesome. So who's still around today from those days?
From those days, who's still around now? We've got Sean Potros, who's an amazing talent in pro. Obviously, you've got four-time now champ Fanger Dan, who just won our championship again the other month. We've got in the later years, just after me, we had the Taylor Jameses and things like that, who's a successful driver. An amazing talent. We've got the Team DSR boys who are already there as well. Adam Davies and Dave Steadman, who are good friends of ours. They're good drivers. And there's a whole lot of talent coming up now too through the bottom ranks, that's for sure.
Yeah, nice. Who should we be looking out for?
Oh, there's a lot of people coming out that are getting good. I got a good friend of mine who, if he can put a package together and drive very well, and that's David Hunter. He drives Lorel over here. He does a lot of videos. He's a big talented driver that doesn't have much mechanical sympathy, that's for sure. But we've got some other friends, Jordan Joyce and things like that up here that are are actually are really talented drivers in their Silvias, so that the pro field is full of people that have come through the ranks like myself, and definitely compete in the race car, that's for sure.
Awesome, mate. You just brought up the phrase mechanical sympathy. How has yours come along throughout the years?
I've definitely gotten a lot better. So, yeah, growing up, like, you have that no-care attitude and don't worry about it, you'll fix it. But now getting a little bit older and owning a house and things like that, you've definitely got to have that mechanical sympathy, especially when you jump into a tool like these 86s that everything's really expensive. And it's a lot of money to replace things if they do break, or source things if they do break. A lot of our parts are from around the world and things like that. So it's also a time aspect. So it definitely plays a little part in your head. But at the same time, you build these cars to be wrecked on. You know, like, we throw these things at walls at 80, 100, 120 km/h, and these things just bounce off the walls and work really well. So, yeah, it's definitely come my mechanical sympathy's gotten a lot better over the coming years. Definitely younger ages, and Troy obviously giving me a whole lot of stick of knowing how to, yeah, definitely treat it a little bit better. But, yeah, we're getting there.
Yeah, nice. Is there anything that can happen over a comp weekend that throws that mechanical sympathy straight out the window?
Oh, 100%. If you get into top four, you know, my tuner, good friend James Bolden, JT Performance. I don't know what he does behind the laptop, but you never have a fault or anything like that. So if you get into top four or top eight and you're singing along, then I think a lot of the cuts get turned off, and you got your spotter in your ear just telling you to give it out. So yeah, when that sort of call comes over the radio to just hit it, yeah, I think you forget about all those expensive parts and you just drive the thing to the 100%.
Yeah, awesome. How difficult is it to sort of throw that aside, the thoughts of the expensive parts that you're probably about to toast?
Yeah, it's quite difficult. But when you're in that moment with all the adrenaline and things like that, you don't really care, you know. Yeah. You've got your voice cheering you on and your crew all hyped up. Like, that's a big thing as well. Like, you put on a good show and you put on a good qualifying lap or a good battle in your 32 or 16, then the vibe's pretty high and you're all pumped on all the energy. So you just go out there and you just want to put on a show and you just want to get that win, you know. So you definitely it's pretty easy to put it aside when you've got that vibe high and that adrenaline's pumping.
Yeah, nice. When was it you stepped up to pro, and what was that sort of transition like for you?
So the pro step up for me came when we hit our Toyota deal. So we ended up started building these fancy GD86s. And it was the year of, we had just finished Troy's at the time, and Troy was in pro already. He won the Pro-Am Championship a couple of years prior and was in pro in his S15. I was still competing in my highly strung S13 and still campaigning the SR20. I was one of the last people of that era in the competition to have the SR20. And I wanted to take that next step and see if it would advance my driving. And while building the 86 on the same side, I sort of put myself down for pro and stepped up into pro and did one season of pro in the S13. It obviously at that time was a bit more advanced than just the track day S13 it was the years before, and it had a dog box and E85 and it made a lot of grunt. And ended up doing quite well, and definitely I learned a lot. And if you want to, in my eyes, drive and drive better, you've got to drive with all these people that you want to compete with, and the people that are driving well. So yeah, I took that step in the S13 whilst building the 86, and I think it was probably one of the best things I've done in my competitive career. It was definitely a big risk. I could have jumped up there and got spanked, but I had a lot of top eights, which was great. And a sort of a butter knife and a very sharp knife sort of aspect of that. The comp was then when we had, you know, the Mustangs and things coming out with a lot of high horsepower, and I was still sitting at a 430 kilowatt SR20, which was definitely hard to keep together as they are when they get to that power level. So I spent a lot of time in the workshops after that, getting that thing ready and straight, and engines and heads and things like that that were sort of like a byproduct to keeping that car running in the Pro Series on the big power and big fuels, but had to have that to run a 265 semi with all these big guys. And then stepping up into the GD86 of just driving that S13 to its limits, definitely helped me to jump into a big pro car with sequential and a lot of grunt. So it's, early on had a lot of success in the GD86, just, yeah, not caring and just driving the hell out of it. So, yeah, I can't remember what year that was, but I think I'm coming into my fifth or sixth year into pro. So
yeah, okay, cool. Yeah. Cool. How'd you do this season?
I actually had a bit of a shocker personally. It was a bit all around. I had some good results and definitely at the final round where I just sort of didn't really care. I think I finished outside of the top 10 this year, which is the first time I've done that in the pro series. So not great for me, but I know what I need to work on and where I need to go. And definitely if we turn it back into another season this year, I will definitely know what to do.
So we'll get into talking about the GT86, mate. Give us a bit of a rundown on your current car.
So the GT86 is GT86 number two in the team. Troy's was built first. They're pretty much damn identical, these cars. They run a Hughes Race Engineering, which is a local company here in New Zealand, 2JZ, which is fully built from top to bottom. Makes 750 horsepower at the wheels. And then we run a local New Zealand gearbox, a TTI sequential in them, which is a 5-speed sequential. It's all managed by James Walden at JT Performance with the Haltech Elite software throughout. Runs a Winters diff in the back. The whole back of the car is actually cut off over the last couple of years. And we run a fiberglass shell over the back, which is sort of sacrificial from pretty much the boot line to the back, but we keep that as factory as we can. We molded that off here locally in New Zealand off a GD86 with then bolted the Rocket Bunny version 3 kit onto that. Run Start Suspension from the USA. They've been a backer of ours up until the last couple of years with custom coilovers from them in the GD86s. We run WiseFab in the front, and a combination of Voodoo and Partshot Max in the rear of these cars to keep them nice and strong in the rear for all these concrete wall rounds we've been running. We run Work Wheels. We've been lucky to be supported by Work Wheels New Zealand, and we've always run good quality wheels on these cars, and it definitely pays dividends when you come to these concrete wall rounds and rub those genuine wheels against the concrete walls, because you don't want to lose a battle by hitting a ripple strip or bumping something and having a cheaper wheel blow to pieces. So that's definitely been an aspect to competition which you need to have. The fab work was all done here in New Zealand by local companies. From start to finish, we've had a whole lot of different people involved in it with the different additions we've done to these vehicles. And they're fairly straightforward in the front with just a small front clip that's on them. And then the rear now is sort of a rear clip that can be sort of sacrificial and house the rear radiator in the back. But it's definitely got a lot of crush and things like that, so you can get up and close, quite close to the walls. And over the last couple of years, we've played around with a whole lot of weight in these cars. So we have a little 19-liter radium fuel cell with one of our partners, Radium, from the States, that sits just behind the passenger seat and enclosure. So that sort of offsets our driver's weight. And definitely play with a few little tricks there. So they're an amazing car, these things, and they've definitely come a long way. And if you would say that this was a pro drift car back in the day, it'd completely blow your mind. You know, like I did an event a couple of months ago where I took it out on the track and drove it in a circuit environment, and they're just so fast, these cars. You know, you can gear them right, you can do things with the Winters, you can put low gears in them and make them go super fast on the track. And so, yeah, they're definitely one hell of a weapon, and to have two of them and build two of them over the last couple of years is definitely something crazy that we've done, and I never thought we'd get to this sort of stage. But you kind of have to do this in competitive drifting to stay competitive in New Zealand. If you wanted to have that want to go overseas to Australia or to Japan or to Europe or even America one day, you've got to have that sort of car behind you. And there's so many different aspects of these things. You've got to make sure they're up to spec and either meet requirements or just to be in that zone to be a competitive drift car.
Yeah, awesome, mate. Off the back of that, genuine wheels rubbing against walls.
That's it. It happens, you know. Over here, we have quite a few custom tracks in D1NZ. So, you've got to have, you've got to have a good wheel. If some of the stuff that I've done with the 86 over the last concrete rounds, a cheaper wheel just wouldn't last. You know, it would smash to pieces. And you do see that with some other drivers. They have that, and it causes a whole lot of damage to other components in the vehicle. So, yeah, we're very lucky and to be backed by one of the world's most renowned and genuine wheel brands, Work Wheels. And they're obviously easily fixable as well if you do put them into those zones or do damage them. So it's definitely an aspect that's easily forgotten by a lot of people. And you've got to have a really good wheel that keeps that car on the ground with that good grippy tire that you choose to be able to compete on.
Yep. So I think it might have been Kurt Blackie that told me, and I'd never really thought about it before, but they've got a really short back end on them. So you're pretty well putting wheels into walls before the actual back end of the car. Is that right?
That is 100% with the 86s. I was just going to mention Kurt. Kurt had an incident with the wall at our final round as well with a wheel, and I don't know what the wheel was, but it blew to pieces and it ended up damaging a whole lot of components on his car, which are very similar to mine. But you've got to change with these 86s. I can't express enough how different it is to other style of car, especially other ones that I've driven as opposed to Silvias. And once you're rubbing that wall, they're pretty much, if you've got your back bumper on the wall, the back of the tire is actually on the wall itself. So sometimes at Bay Park, when you're coming around, you think the car is slowing down or something's going wrong with the car. You're just actually too far on the wall, and the actual rubber of the tire is in that concrete barrier, and it's slowing the vehicle down.
Wow, so it's actually biting into the wall and pulling you up that way.
That's it. Yeah, 100%. It feels like you put a handbrake on, or you're stuck with your left foot stuck in the foot brake, but it's not. It's just that you literally have the rim or the tire actually stuck in the wall.
Wow, that's unreal. The SR to the 2J swap jump. How did that go? Did that go for you?
Amazing. I remember the first time driving the 86, and I hadn't had much seat time in a powerful car before. I'd driven Troy's RB S15 once and made a mess of it at a Mad Mike Summer Bash day. But, yeah, jumping straight into more power and, like I'm saying, twice the power of what the SR had and probably even more torque, plus throw a sequential gearbox into it, you can definitely focus a lot more on pointing the car where it needs to go. But it was a massive step up, but it was something that I was so keen on doing, and I was so pumped. And that also was a big driver for the stages of getting the car done and building the car properly, because I'd seen the success that Troy had in the 86 already, because he obviously had his a year or so. We finished his a year or so before mine, and I was still campaigning in the S13 at the time of still building the 86. So, yeah, it was an amazing feeling of jumping into it, and I always thought at those times of what it would have been like having the big power six cylinder or big gearbox six cylinder into an S chassis. And I was only up till just recently I've been able to experience that. And it's a wicked feeling of bringing both those worlds back for me and putting something like the 2J and the big gearbox into an S chassis.
Yeah, nice. What's one thing about your current setup that you'd change if you could?
In the 86?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't really know. Like, we were sort of pioneers at the start. So in New Zealand for the 86s, there wasn't many around. So we were jumping forward and doing things. We were always constantly playing with the weight in the cars. So maybe the one thing would be getting a bit more weight into the back, further back where we've cut off. But, yeah, I can't really argue of what's wrong with it or what's not good with it. They're an amazing car. I'm very lucky to be able to drive a car of this caliber and build a car of this caliber, but I definitely like in our cars, like style is a big thing for us and having that, but we went towards more of a race car style with these 86s, and it's really hard to get the winters diffs high in the back of them. So one of the things would be playing in the back to get the winters a little bit higher so we get the car a little bit lower, but then also you struggle with an 86 with a short stroke of a shock in the back. So it's sort of a really got to play on the middle ground of getting that right setup, but you could bone it out in the back, but you'd lose a whole lot in suspension movement and lose a whole lot of drive because the winter's diff sits quite low, and In both cars, the diffs actually tink the ground every now and then on some of the concrete rounds. But definitely one of the things would be to get them a bit lower and looking a bit better and that, you know, the sort of style side of things for them.
Yeah, awesome, mate. We'll jump over to questions from past guests, mate. And at the end of it, I'm going to get you to give us a question.
No worries.
Future guests. So coming from Aaron Burns, who inspired you to get into drifting?
Who inspired me? My brother, Troy Jenkins.
Nice. Coming from Brendan Tothero, if you could build any, essentially the question was any chassis motor combo, what would it be?
Oh, man, like I'm an SR man, you know. I'm in my Toyotas now and I love my Toyota motors, but I would just love to build like a gotcha style Russian S15 with like a dry sump 2.4. Like I talked to Brody Mayer over there from Tassie and he's got an insane S13 and that's always what I want it to be. So it'd definitely be like a crazy SR20S chassis.
Yeah, awesome. That car is phenomenal, by the way.
Amazing. I love that car.
Yeah. Coming from Luke Visma, what inspires you when it comes to your passion?
Oh, what inspires me to become passionate? Like it's just that family orientated thing and that style of when you've got all your friends and it's a different sort of vibe drifting as a motorsport. You know, you go and you have fun and obviously you get lost in the competition aspects of things. But yeah, it definitely inspires me to go back out there, get our team back together. Fix that car, spend that money, do what you need to do and go out and put on a show, you know, like we have great fans over here as well. And New Zealanders obviously over there. So yeah, definitely that sort of push to go out and put on a show and have fun and drive the cars hard and catch up with everyone is definitely a big inspiration.
Nice, man. Nice. Coming from Jasmine Green, what is your favorite dinosaur?
I was never really into dinosaurs, you know. The only dinosaurs I'm probably into is the lollies that I eat every now and then. But I don't know, maybe a T-Rex, you know. I'll just go with the common ground. The T-Rex is probably my favorite dinosaur.
Yeah, nice. I will also accept Alan's dinosaurs as well. awesome, mate. What are you coming from Matthew Craig, what are you spending your last $100 on?
That's a tough one, eh? I don't know. My last $100, I don't know. Maybe if there was a young gun getting into a track day or something like that out there that was like me back years ago, you know, I'd give $100 to a young gun and get him off the street and get him to go have a go on a track day.
Hell yeah, that's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, nice. And coming from Matt Mingay, what inspires you to push on after a hard setback or injury?
Definitely the people around you. People around you, what's what forces you to get back out there to do what the things you love, because you see the sort of support they give you and things like that. I've had a couple of big setbacks or big injuries in my life, and the big inspiration is the people close to you and around you that just force you to get back up there and go again.
Nice, mate. It's now your turn to give us a question for a few minutes.
We've got such a variety of questions. I'm looking up at the screen up here. What am I going to say? You've covered everything so well. What got you inspired in drifting? What combo would it be?
So you could go anywhere here. Like when I first sort of brought this into the show, the questions I had in my head were things like, where do you keep your tomato sauce in the cup? You know, or which way do you roll your toilet paper? Just silly questions like that. So you can go anywhere you want, man.
Mine actually is going to be, if a young gun asked you about getting into drifting, what would you tell them?
Nice. Awesome. We've got some Patreon questions as well. Coming from Shifting Through the Gears podcast, if you could compete against anyone in North America, who would it be?
So North America up there. So we're talking like Formula D drivers?
We're talking FD, yeah.
Talking FD. To compete against anyone would be Frederick Garsbo. I've done a bit of work with him in Japan and things like that. Done some drift schools over there and done some driving with him, and he's a phenomenal driver. And I always watch what he's doing, and I think that he's something else. That man, he's got an incredible focus of what he's doing and things like that. So, yeah, definitely be Frederick Garsbo.
Nice, good choice. And top choice for a beginner drift car.
Man, it's got to be a Silvia. I've just gone back to basics recently and jumped back into a Silvia. You know, and I know they're not they're not of what sort of cheaper prices they were years ago. So yeah, my first would be just get into a Silvia. They're just straight out of the box, a great sort of chassis to go and drift. And then my second, I see a lot of these people are now going out there and drifting these 350 Zs and things like that. And they seem like they've got a lot of grunt and a lot of power and a lot of lock from the get go. But top choice would be a Nissan Silvia.
Nice, awesome, mate. We'll start to wrap it up, mate. Do you have any words of wisdom for the listeners?
Words of wisdom, you know, it's like I'm probably not old enough and further into my career to be able to apply or offer any advice or words of wisdom. But things are just like, do it right from the start, you know. Make sure that vehicle that you're going to go out and do whatever you want to do it is in it, whether it be burnouts or circuit or track race, make sure it's safe. Make sure you go and have a whole lot of fun, you know. Like, you've got to enjoy what you're doing, and maybe later on you can get stuck into your competition sides of things, but you definitely got to start at the basics of having a whole lot of fun and enjoying what it is, and try not to get caught up into that competition side of it early on. So yeah, go and have a whole lot of fun in your car.
Nice, mate, nice. Is there anyone you'd like to acknowledge?
The people around me, obviously my brother. We live our lives together. We own a house together. We run our motorsport team. But the biggest thing for around me would be my close friends and things like that, which are also my team members and things like that. They push me to do what we do. Good friends that are in our ears, that either spotters or mechanics or family friends or people like that just turn up. My brother's partner turns up and makes us food and gives us food. My parents turn up with food and things like that to the events, and they probably don't really care about the drifting or whatever, as long as we're there and we've got everyone around us and we're doing that sort of thing over here. Because like I said, we're not a full paid professional outfit. So yeah, definitely got to acknowledge the close people around me and the people that help me do what we do.
Awesome, mate. Let everybody know where they can find you, dude.
Yeah, well, Tim Jenkins, the day-to-day for our team, timjenkins.co.nz. Got a few things up there. You can find our merch, which obviously I'm wearing right now, and things like that. Our Facebook, Team Jenkins Motorsport. My personal Instagram, Ben Jenkins NZ, and Team Jenkins Motorsport. And Troy Jenkins, and my brother. Just started this new thing with Adrian. We've called the Rad Shop. So you can find us with the S15 and what we're doing with the S15. That's on the Rad Shop. And closely with Phoenix Radiators. So yeah, we have a YouTube that we've started off slow, the Rad Shop YouTube, which is a whole lot of fun, and going back to building cars and enjoying it, and not too much of a serious nature. So yeah, definitely get on the Rad Shop. We're trying to release as much as we can over a little bit, and I'm playing a little bit of a hand and doing a bit of vlogging myself. So yeah, definitely jump on that. But the main one, Team Jenkins, this is why I'm here and why I'm in front of you with my brother and I. And we have a YouTube as well of a whole lot of stuff. We haven't done much recently, but you can follow a whole lot of our round recaps and the old Silvias and the GT86s back in the time on our Team Jenkins Motorsport YouTube.
Awesome, mate. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been awesome.
No worries at all. Pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. And yeah, you might have a brother on in an episode to come. But yeah, it's been a pleasure, man. Thanks for chatting.
Awesome. Thank you, mate. Well, that's it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope to have you tune in again next week. Don't forget to head over and follow Gutter to Gutter on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok by searching for Gutter to Gutter Podcast. You can also find us on Patreon at patreon.com/GutterToGutterPodcast, and be sure to check out our new website at guttertogutterpodcast.com. I'd really appreciate it if you could share the podcast with a friend and even consider leaving a review on your podcast platform of choice. I look forward to bringing you more next week, so please have a great week and look after each other.